I know this work is hard. I know we don't always agree. I know the country feels particularly divided right now. But the organization that I've seen for the last 3 years, the people that I have met, you are ready. We are ready. And I promise, lo prometo, that what we are made of is exactly the right stuff to meet the challenges of our time.
Hello, and welcome to Letters from the Lunchroom, a podcast by Communities and Schools of Mid-America. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge. Communities and Schools is a nationwide nonprofit which connects students and their families to local resources in order to remove barriers so that they will have greater success in school and in life. During this podcast, we talk to people who have a relationship with our organization. From students to staff members and alumni to volunteers, we know that people who connect with nonprofits have a story that led them there, and we want to know that story. Today's episode kicks off a new series for this podcast, one that we are calling the Town Hall Series. Episodes featuring this title will have been recorded at the 2019 Leadership Town Hall, an annual event in which people from Communities and Schools affiliates across the nation gather to learn, share, and to network. Each episode will feature an interview done with a participant at this event, as well as audio from their presentation. We are going to start off this episode by sharing an abbreviated version of the 2019 Leadership Town Hall State of the Union Address, presented by President and CEO of Communities and Schools, Dale Urquiaga. Stay tuned as we head into the lunchroom with Dale.
Just about 2.5 years ago, I stood before the CIS Network for my first leadership town hall address. It was our 40th anniversary. Celebration was in the air that year. There was even dancing. And we were then, as now, all in for kids. I spoke with you about entering the third act of the Communities and Schools story, a chapter focused on organizational sustainability, deepening our commitment to evidence-based practice, and growing to serve more students in more places. Since that time, we have journeyed fully into this newest chapter of our history. I have to say, so far, it's a pretty good read. Tens of millions of dollars have been added to budgets across the network. We continue to be recognized as a leader in driving student outcomes, and something like 250,000 more students are being served by the CIS model. Those are the plot points that keep this narrative moving, so let me share a few of the compelling characters who have captured my imagination over these last few years. The towering high school football player who told me with tears in his eyes that his site coordinator was the first adult in his life who told him he was worth something. The tiny fifth grade girl who mentioned that her family saved rainwater because they could not afford to pay all their utility bills. The children who read to me and made me laugh in a library in the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. The transgender student who bluntly relayed that CIS had kept her from committing suicide. And the site coordinator right here in Chicago who explained that one of his elementary school students could take the entire school building off course due to the ripple effect of his behavior until that energy was redirected through careful case management. And of course, the CIS alumni, who for 3 years have pushed me to go further, be bolder, say more about the issues we're facing as a network and as a country and as a family. As one of them said to me in what was a personal moment of leadership angst following the Parkland school shooting, "We've got your back, Dale, just do the right thing." This year's town hall is dedicated to exploring and celebrating the CIS family narrative. Because that, as you've seen so far, my friends, is the true state of the Communities and Schools Network. A testament that is as much about the future as the past. a beautiful mosaic of the modern American family. And like any good mosaic, there are many different pieces that make up CIS. Urban, inner city America, suburban communities, families who live with the history of slavery, students who have learning or physical challenges, English language learner populations, families who are homeless, students living with segregation, racism, sexism, discrimination based on disability, xenophobia, homophobia. We must admit that these are also the current components of the big picture. That is why we will spend much of Town Hall exploring the diversity, equity, and inclusion imperative that is the underpinning of our strategic plan. It forces us to look at the root causes and harsh realities. We must face the truths about American history that spark current political and social debate because we intend to affect change in the public education system and in the overall policy environment. To do that, we will continue to tell the stories of our students and their site coordinators to inspire policymakers, funders, volunteers, and others to join our moment. Because the narrative of CIS is, in fact, the narrative of America. I know this work is hard. I know we don't always agree. I know the country feels particularly divided right now. But the organization that I've seen for the last 3 years, the people that I have met, you are ready. We are ready. And I promise, lo prometo, that what we are made of is exactly the right stuff to meet the challenges of our time.
Welcome to the lunchroom, Dale.
Thanks for having me. It's great
to
be here.
So please introduce yourself.
Sure. I'm Dale Urquiaga, and I have the honor of being the national president and CEO of Communities and Schools.
Yes. And you've been doing that for just right over 3 years?
Right at three years.
Correct. Very nice. So we're going to jump into the meat of it.
Okay.
And I want to know your story. As you know, with this podcast, we talk to people who have a relationship with communities and schools, and we want to know Why did you choose to put your life in that? So where did it all start? When did you first hear about communities and schools?
That's a great question. So I was originally from Nevada. I was born and raised there, mm-hmm. and I worked in government there for a long time. I worked at the Clark County School District, which is Las Vegas, mm-hmm. happens to be the fifth largest school district in America. Communities and Schools has had a presence there, thanks to Elaine Wynn, who's the national mm-hmm. board chair, mm-hmm. for many years. When I worked in the district, I knew what Communities and Schools was. I sat next to the Community School Partnership Office, but it was, because of the role I had at the time, it was one more program inside the district. They didn't know a lot about it. As luck would have it, I later became the state superintendent of public instruction. So I ran the state school system for the state of Nevada for Governor Brian Sandoval. And quite honestly, Communities and Schools came to me to ask for an appropriation.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
They asked for funding out of the governor's budget. And the great part of this story, I said no.
What?
I'm not a big fan of earmarks that specifically designate money for a single agency because mm-hmm. then that agency spends its time defending itself at every legislative session. Mm-hmm. And so instead, what Governor Sandoval did was created what are called victory schools. They're schools that focus on zip codes where folks live in poverty. Mm-hmm. And we used a formula built it into the law of how that money would be distributed. And that scheme or formula looks exactly like the Communities and Schools model. You have to have a needs assessment. You have to address mm-hmm. root cause. You have to involve community partners. And so as a practical matter, Communities and Schools has qualified through a competitive grant process for many of those dollars that the prior governor and then the current governor of Nevada have invested. So that was really my first interaction and my first sort of way to boost the work. I was then invited to Town Hall in 2016 to give a speech about funding because I was a state finance nerd, and I came to Communities and Schools and talked about how to access different funding streams and talked to bureaucrats like me, and the rest is history. 9 months later, I was president of the organization.
Dang, you make it sound easy, but I know that's not the entire story. So let's go back further then.
Okay.
you are now the president of a nonprofit, an awesome nonprofit. Let's not lie. And why? What was it that put you on that path? Where did that all start?
Yeah. I tell everybody, I could have been a communities and schools student. I grew up in rural Nevada. My mother and father were born in this country, but my grandparents immigrated from the Basque Country in Spain. My parents did not speak English at home as children. My relatives did not speak English around us when I was growing up. We spoke English. They spoke Spanish or Basque. My dad was a sharecropper. My mom was a housewife. But they were always caring adults who managed to put together social capital, what we would call today, so that my siblings and I all attended college and all have had very successful lives. But if I go from that beginning to becoming state superintendent of public instruction, what I wanted along that path was for every child to have what I got. I'm like a poster child for the American dream. I'm what should happen. Your ancestors move here, you get a better lifestyle than they had, you get to have these amazing post-secondary experiences, as we call them. And I saw a lot of the kids in the schools for which I had responsibility who were not going to get what I got. And poverty or trauma were the barriers. And here's an organization that does just that thing. And so I probably could have done a lot of things when I left my position in Nevada. And this was something that called to me in a way that I could give back. That's a big value of this organization to kids, frankly, like me.
That makes total sense, because you grew up and you knew what you grew up with and you knew what you were thankful for with your family relationships and the caring adults who came into your life to support you. And then as you looked around as an adult who was doing great and you looked around at those other kids and saw what they were missing, and then that became the driving force.
Yep.
Excellent.
One of the things I love about this organization, we see young people who really self-actualize. We talk about empowerment, or they take charge of their own story. It used to be that people thought communities and schools gives kids stuff, food, clothing, shelter, transportation. And yes, we do that. More importantly is unlocking that potential. And for me, it was unlocked by my parents, my sixth grade teacher, some really key people in my life. If you hear our young people talk, that is what they tell you. They get that, like, we may have helped them, their family, pay their gas bill at home, or we may have given them shoes or whatever. But the true story is we let them have the space to find out who they are. And that's, I think, the most compelling piece for me, is because I got that and I know how that has paid off in my own life. And so when I see young people denied that by virtue of their circumstance or their personal being, I told my chair last night, my heart hurts for kids in this country. And that's, I think, what drives everybody in this organization uniformly. We all have a different way that we express it. We can say we're mission driven, or my board chair has been saying we are infected with the communities and schools way of being. However you express it, I think for everybody in this organization, that's what it's about.
Something that I'm really curious about, and I love asking people this question, is do you have a favorite memory or a favorite instance that really comes to the surface whenever you look back on this history that you have with communities and schools and of the work that we do?
There are so many stories of young people that I've met. I've met great big football players who cried telling me their story, and little tiny fifth graders who really bluntly tell me their family circumstances, and kids who talk to me about, frankly, not committing suicide because CIS was present. But there are three little boys who I think about a lot. I was in New Orleans visiting a school. I think these boys were second grade, and they were working with their psych coordinator, Max, and he was teaching them how to identify their emotions, to give their emotions names. And so we played a game of Candyland. Most people remember Candyland. It's easy for kids because it's all color-coded. Well, Max had created a color code to Candyland. He called it Feelings Candyland. Each color represented an emotion. And so we played Feelings Candyland. And I didn't really understand it. And he had told me, look, I'm working with them. He was a clinical social worker. He was working with them on their trauma and adversity, and they didn't have words to name things. And so I kind of understood that, and then I played the game for a while, and we would get a card for happiness, and we would all have to talk about a time when we were happy. And I was happy because it was close to Christmas. One of the boys was happy because his uncle had just been let out of prison. And I was sad because of something that had transpired on probably knowing me on television. Another boy was sad because someone in his home had died and that person was their primary caregiver. And as I processed through it in a really disarming way, I began to understand their set of circumstances were completely different. The things they were happy for, the things they were sad about. Max told me later one of the boys had been the subject of abuse at home over the holiday and he had a big scar on his arm. And they didn't have a way to talk about that. And yet Max was unlocking all of that for them, emotion, good and bad. I go back to that a lot in this job. I hear about trauma and adverse childhood experiences more here than I've ever heard in my life. And that makes my heart hurt. But I also see people like Max every day in this organization who have the skills or find the community partner. It doesn't have to be a communities and schools employee. It might be a clinician from the community. So I think about Feelings Candyland a lot. I was not raised to talk about my own emotions easily. And yet that's nothing compared to some of the barriers that our kids have or their families have. And that really sums up the organization in a special way for me.
Thank you. I totally agree. And something that I was thinking about whenever you were telling that story is, so I've been interviewing a lot of people while I'm here at Town Hall, and it's been amazing. I've interviewed some other CIS staff members. I have also interviewed some students, and that has been really enlightening. And something I think is really important for us to share with the audience, because people who are listening to this podcast are still getting to know communities and schools. And the work that the site coordinators do is so vast. We cannot put it into a pamphlet and still adequately describe all of the work that they do. And you brought up something that I just kind of went bing in my head and it dinged. Every student I've talked to that I've interviewed has mentioned that they have considered suicide and that they have been essentially redirected because of having that one caring adult of that CIS site coordinator coming into their life and listening to them. That's the super key part, is listening. And I heard them say that over and over again, is that this person, they actually listened to me. And that the act of listening has so much caring behind it. And so then the other two things that I heard from these students was that they were thankful, which is wonderful. And that they truly felt love, and then they were giving it back and they were paying it forward. And it was just like that ripple effect of love just radiating from this organization inwards and outwards and through it and upside down and all around. And this organization truly is love in action. And we see it inside with the, like whenever you first sat down, I don't remember if I got it on recording or not, but you said, do I like what I do? And I just laughed at you. And I'm like, are you nuts? Dude, I'm madly in love with my job. I've worked here for 5 years and I am still stunned. I have a 13-year-old daughter and I sent her a message the other day. I think it was yesterday morning after I got done doing my first set of interviews. And I said, I hope that one day you find a job that makes you as truly happy as I do.
That's amazing.
Oh yeah, no, I'm living the dream. And I say that all the time. I am living.
Lots of people cannot say that. That's great.
A lot of it, I think, is what you're talking about with having the authenticity and embracing your uniqueness. And I know that we're working on that to even improve it with the work that we're doing with DEI. I do want to definitely mention that because I think it's really important to the work that we're doing here in the agency. I think that recognizing and taking action regarding diversity, equity, and inclusion is incredibly important, not just internally, but also externally with so many of these kids that are facing challenges because of issues surrounding that. Do you want to expand a little bit about that? Go for it.
You bet. I'll say two things. One, I think you're absolutely correct about the suicide conversation or the anxiety conversation. There is a mental health crisis in this nation's schools, and anybody who says different has not been in a school. It is not limited to kids in poverty. I have schools in upper middle class neighborhoods who beg for communities and schools to be present there. We only have so many resources. We can only be in so many places. But kids are under stress today in ways that they simply were not 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. So that is just true. And I think some of that is the times in which we live. The country feels very divided. We're very good at putting people into camps and otherizing, well, you don't look like me, or you don't sound like me, or you pursue your life in a different way from mine. And so then I can feel better about myself if I feel badly about you. And I think that's why the diversity work is important. We are very focused on student outcomes in this organization and achieving equitable outcomes for all kids. In order to deliver on that promise, I believe we have to be a diverse organization that is very inclusive. Like, I can't hire two of every type of race, ethnicity, sexual orientation. Like, I can't. Like, there aren't that many jobs in the organization. And so we can diversify our boards, our staff can be more representative of our student population. We can also improve our skills of cultural acuity so that we know how to talk to folks who aren't like us, and we know how to include them in decision making and in the conversation. And I think if the organization does that at all levels, starting with the national board and all the way to the school site, I think we get better outcomes for kids. I say all the time, I'm not trying to make people be better people. I'm not trying to change people in the organization. I have one focus, and that's more equitable outcomes for all my kids. And I have today 1.6 million kids. I have two of my own, and I have 1.6 million in this organization, and another somewhere between 10 and 13 million more in this country who should be served and are not. And so if we can, as an organization, understand our history with slavery and our history about racism and our tensions around immigration and our view of sexual orientation, our view of disability in this country, if we can understand all those things and many more, all the isms and phobias that you can think of in the dictionary, they all confront us, and they're all present in our schools, and they're all present in the way we all were raised. And so putting all that out is pretty scary work. I give the organization credit for being willing to do it. Hard conversations. We all bring our values. Many of us are people of faith in this organization, and we have faith teachings about certain isms and phobias. That's all hard for folks, and I get that. And at the end of the day, what I see whenever I see our young people together is stories like you're hearing here. Like, if we can see them for who they are without judgment, it's one thing to see someone for who they are, and it's something else to not judge. We had a speaker say that today, and it really has stuck with me. If we can get ourselves to that place, we're going to have a lot more kids unlock their potential in really successful and amazing ways. And listen, I always say, like, I don't really care why you join this group to support us as a donor or as a volunteer. I don't care if it's economic self-interest. It is in folks' interest to have all young people in this country succeed. That is just the plain math. There are more old people like me than there are young people. And so I need all young people to be successful so that the nation's economy continues. Like, if you want to, if that's the reason you show up to help us, yeah, I'm fine. I'd love it if you showed up and, you know, wanted to put down some of your phobias and isms. But if you just want to base it on math, like, that's hardcore math. It is imperative for the future of our country that all means all, and that all kids succeed. That's just the demographics.
There was an alum that I spoke to, and she said the reason why people should get involved with CIS is to be selfish and to help raise those young kids to continue and make this world better, because they're the ones who are going to grow up and make a difference. And so she put it back on them, and they're like, you know, she said, you know, be selfish, because your good impact on these kids is going to make them better people, which is then going to make your world better. And I was like, that's brilliant.
It really is. And I'm glad that she can say that out loud. Like, I happen to be a Roman Catholic, and my faith has saints. Mm-hmm. And there are not a lot of saints in the world. I don't expect everybody to be a saint, but she's absolutely right. Oh, yeah. We need young people to be successful. And playing a role in that, you don't have to be a saint. You can be a regular old person and still help a child see possibility and open opportunity that they might not otherwise have had because of their circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. So there are a couple more questions that I definitely want to get to. One question that I really would like to put into this podcast is, if there's a student who is listening to this podcast and is struggling, and maybe they're not yet involved with communities and schools, maybe communities and schools is not even there yet, what would you tell that kiddo? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So communities and schools has a very special way of working, and we have a proven model, but there are lots of caring adults in your life. You might not know if you're that student, but I would say that something in your gut will tell you that person A is safer than person B. I think we all know. I can remember teachers. There are teachers that I would talk to, and there are teachers that I wouldn't talk to. And if it's a teacher, if it's someone at church, if it's your parent or your sibling who happens to be older, or your aunt, like, find somebody to talk to. I worry that the worst thing young people do is retreat and stay on their own. The sense of isolation and loneliness in the country is demonstrable in surveys. It shows up now as a genuine mental and behavioral health concern among young people. And so what I want is for young people to talk to an adult and be sure it's a person with whom you feel safe. And if you don't, if that person does something that makes you feel unsafe, walk away fast and find somebody else. Like, don't fall into a trap with an adult who seems like they're going to help you and then they're actually not. But we've got to have kids trust the adults in their life. They don't have to be biologically related. I think that's the most important thing, is like, don't try to do this on your own. And if you have to take a friend with you, like, I have met young people in CIS who bring their friend to CIS, because I was told by a young woman in South Carolina that a friend of her, like, she knew they didn't have food at home, and so she brought her with her, like she was joining a club. She was more concerned about the other young woman than she was about her own family circumstances. If that's how young people go together, like, go together as two people and find a counselor or a teacher or someone that you can speak to, but just don't do this by yourself.
No. It's not your responsibility if you're already struggling, especially if you're a young person, to pull yourself out of it on your own. There are people out there that care. And if they're not obvious, keep looking and don't give up.
Yep. Absolutely. I think that's great advice.
So I'm going to ask you three more questions. I'm going to do our extra credit portion. You are familiar with this, correct? Okay.
Yes.
So the first question is, what is one song that whenever it comes on the radio, you cannot help but sing to?
It's by the Eurythmics, and it's called Sweet Dreams Are Made of This.
Have you heard the Marilyn Manson version?
I don't care for that version quite as much.
Same. No, I'm a big fan of, like, the originals. Yeah. So, excellent. Okay, great. Question number two. If you had one superpower, what would it be and why?
Mine would be time travel, because I want to meet my ancestors. I am fascinated by my family. I did not know one set of my grandparents. I don't need to meet famous people. I'm not going back in time to meet Moses. Like, I want to meet my ancestors. I want to know why my family made the choices that it made. And because I believe that those stories stack up and make me Absolutely. Who I am. So that would be my superpower.
Okay,
would be
I'm going to dig into that just like a little bit more, because you said time travel, but then you only traveled backwards. Would you potentially use it to travel forwards?
No. I actually think that's dangerous. I'm a science fiction nerd, and so time travel back is dangerous enough that you might change history.
It's what, the butterfly
effect? Yeah. That's correct. But I think going forward, one would alter one's behavior.
Yeah.
And so, and I do enough of that second guessing today. Like, I should do this, I should do that. I do enough of that mapping in my own head. I wouldn't want that. I'd be happy to go back and look. I've often wanted to write a science fiction story where time travel became like cinema or theater, so you could set up bleachers for people to view historical events,
without
but they couldn't
them.
Interact with them.
Oh my god!
Yeah, so people could go back and truly understand what caused this event or what, but they would be there in sort of an ethereal way, not messing up, because I really believe we can learn from what happened before.
That's what I was just going to say. Like, it brings me back into what we were talking about earlier about DEI and learning from other people's experiences. And the more that we get out and we actually experience what people are going through, even if it's just hearing their stories, it helps you grow as a person. And then that's where everything changes, because then you start approaching people with a more open mind and a more open heart. And so as you listen to other people's stories, and so I love that. I love that. I hope you do write that book.
I'll try.
That would be phenomenal. I would totally read that.
After I retire from CIS.
I would be like, I totally interviewed that guy. He pitched that book on the pod. Nobody stole that book
idea.
Yeah,
if anybody's listening who would like to give me an advance to write that book, I'd be glad to do that.
Okay. So it's your final question. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
What is the number one reason why you feel that people should get involved with communities and schools?
Every young person deserves the chance that you got. Plain and simple. You might be somebody famous. You might be somebody rich. You might be somebody ordinary who has a job and has a family. Or you might be fortunate enough to have a pet in your life. Whatever you define as happiness, everybody deserves that. And there are circumstances that get in the way. And so it's why I do this work. Everybody should be able to get what I got or get what they want. They don't have to get what I got. That's, I think, the reason. Like, we should want everybody to have a shot. I think that's pretty intrinsic in why America was founded. And I think it has to remain true today. And I think communities and schools helps deliver on that by paving a path that kids can follow if they wish. And then giving them the skills to build their own path when they get to the end of that one.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much, Dale.
Thanks for doing this.
I appreciate your time.
I'm so glad you were with us at Town Hall in Chicago. There's 580 amazing people here. And I'm glad you got to speak with some.
This has been an absolute blast. And I continue to, like I said earlier, just fall in love with this organization. And I'm so excited for what we're doing on every level. I love the What We Are Made Of campaign. You guys can check it out at whatwearemadeof.us. I love the DEI work that we're doing. I think it is an essential part for this organization, the work that we do. And I'm so excited for it.
Thank you.
And thank you for your leadership and for taking the time and for everything that you do.
You bet.
All right.
Been my pleasure.
For more information on communities and schools, please check out communitiesandschools.org. You can find information about the MidAmerica affiliate at cismidamerica.org. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast, leave us a review, and follow us on social media at cismidamerica. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Letters from the Lunchroom. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge, and until next time, class is dismissed.